Miff Warhurst.
Weekdays on ABC Radio, online and on the ABC Listen app.
One of Africa's biggest media stars, Adeola Fayohun, and she is the presenter of Keeping It Real with Adeola. And it's a YouTube show that's watched by millions throughout the continent. And it came to worldwide prominence a couple of years ago after that famous doorstop interview with the then president of Zimbabwe, Robert Mugabe. Thank you so much for joining us today, Adeola.
Hi, thank you for having me. I would not say I'm one of the biggest in Africa.
Oh, look, you can talk yourself up. That is so fine. You're Nigerian. Can we start by painting a picture of your country, where you grew up, how you came to be a YouTube sensation?
Nigeria is one of the richest countries in terms of natural resources. We have so many natural resources that we should be one of the leading countries in the world. We have a lot of well-educated people, great doctors and artists. Nigerian music is everywhere. Our food is rich. You know, our athletes are known worldwide, as well as the Nigerian movie industry is the third largest in the whole world. But you would never know of all these great things because we have just one bot, and that's our leaders. We have a lot of scammers as leaders in Nigeria. They are using public funds to enrich themselves and making it hard for the regular people to survive. So we still don't have basic amenities in different parts of Nigeria. I'm talking about good roads, stable electricity, stable running water. When the government cannot provide you those basic things and you have to fend for yourself, you have to provide your own electricity by having power generator. Almost every household in Nigeria has a power generator. You have to get your own water. It's like, what's the point of having a government? And that's what my show is about, challenging the power that be, those who think that they are gods because they are politicians, and challenging them on how they're using public funds. So that's what I do on my show.
What is the relationship between government in Nigeria and journalists and the media in general? Is there a mutual respect?
There's definitely not mutual respect. Well, it's one-sided. A lot of people worship a lot of people worship politicians back home. You dare not ask them some questions. You dare not confront them with some issues, which is what I do on my show. I see them as regular human beings because I've lived in the U.S. for quite a while. And in the U.S., they don't worship politicians. You ask them the tough questions. They're supposed to serve the people. They are there to serve the people, not for the people to worship them. They're not supposed to use public funds for personal things. And so on my show, I talk to them like regular people, the people that are supposed to serve the people. And a lot of African officials are not used to that.
Yeah, that's true. So in a way, it's quite a controversial position that you hold in Nigeria.
It is. And, you know, it's funny because for a lot of people, when I started my show, a lot of Nigerians were not used to someone challenging the government. And so they try to censor me. So a lot of people would write me and tell me, get a real job. You're a woman. What do women know about politics? And then I found out that when I talk about things that they cannot counter, some of them will call me a prostitute. I guess that's supposed that's supposed to hurt my ego or something, but it has not worked. And when they don't call me a prostitute, I get worried because I'm like, they have not seen my show. But when they call me a prostitute, I'm like, yes, they've seen it. So, but I've also gotten a lot of positive feedback. And now some people will write me and tell me that, oh, I didn't know a woman can talk the way you do or reason the way you do. And my first instinct is to tell them, well, maybe if you give the women around you a chance, you would learn a few things. But I would just say, thank you, because, you know, it's like, why bother?
Yeah, I imagine. Politicians, though, do they get your satire, or are they terrified?
So I found out that many of them are watching. So the thing is, I try to make people laugh on my show. And so I found out that many of them watch, and some of them see it as, oh, she's just joking. And then some of them, when I meet them, they call me the troublemaker, and I'm always surprised by the people that are actually watching the show when I meet some of the politicians and they tell me, oh yeah, I know you, the troublemaker. I'm like, oh my goodness, he's also watching. So I'm glad that they're getting the message. Even if sometimes they think it's a joke, I think they have to think twice now before doing some things because they know it may end up on the show. For example, a Nigerian politician claimed that he had 7 degrees, one from Harvard, one from London School of Economics. And then I talked about it on my show, how ridiculous it is. The fact that he can't even produce one of the 7 degrees. So I feel like next
time. So he
time,
was lying, essentially.
Of course he was lying. How do you have 7 degrees? It takes 4 years or 3 years for 1 degree and you couldn't even produce one. So I feel like after that, more politicians would think twice before claiming to have several degrees, because what they do is many of them, they go to like Harvard for like a few weeks course and they come back and then they claim that they have a degree from Harvard. So when I talked about it on the show, I think now they'll be more careful before claiming to have several degrees.
So you're calling people to account.
Well, that's what we're supposed to do.
Fact checking, doing all of those things.
It's ironic because Nigeria is a country of 180 million people. You can't imagine that we're all stupid when you give us stories like that and you expect us to believe you. But because most people don't challenge them all these years, that's why they continue to do stupid stuff like that. So, but now we have more people doing what I'm doing. So when people challenge what they say, now they'll be more careful, especially with this age of social media. And I think it's very important and necessary to do what I do.
I played some audio before of your doorstop interaction with former president of Zimbabwe, Robert Mugabe. We'll take another quick listen of some of it now.
Okay. Mr. President, I know you can hear me. You're pushing me, sir. You're pushing me. Sir, don't you think it's time to step down, sir?
It's okay.
Sir, don't you think it's time to step down?
Which one?
How's your health? How are you feeling? I have no idea what that means.
Harry Potter's asking. President Mugabe is going to step down.
If you've just joined us, that's Nigerian journalist and my guest right now, Adeola Fayohun, who is trying to interview the then Zimbabwean president, Robert Mugabe. Adeola is my guest. What was the fallout for you after that experience, for you personally, but also for Mugabe?
So I really wish that he would say something that day, but he didn't. But I think I got my message across. So after that interview, first of all, I didn't expect for it to go viral the way it did. But I got mixed reactions. And I think some of them were hypocritical from some Africans who said that I was disrespectful because I asked him when he would step down. Again, that comes back to the whole idea of, as Africans, we're supposed to respect our elderly people. You're not supposed to challenge them. How do you say someone is doing something wrong when you're not supposed to challenge them? How do you call them a thief when they are stealing money, but they are elderly people, so you're not supposed to challenge them? So me asking Mugabe when he will step down, some Africans saw that as overstepping my boundary and being disrespectful. And on my show, I told them that a lot of these people were actually Nigerians. And I said, this is hypocritical because Nigerians would never allow a leader to stay in power for 30 years. They would never allow that. So why would you have an issue with me asking when a man will step down when he has stayed for more than 30 years? But at the same time, I got a lot of positive feedback from people that said, we've been wanting to ask him this question for years. Thank you for asking. So I thought it was ironic that I asked this question and people saw it as a big deal, because to me, that's the question to ask. That day, a lot of journalists were asking him to smile for a picture. And I was like, this is ridiculous. It's Mugabe. He's been in power for more than 30. We should ask when he will step down, which was why I asked when he will step down. I thought it was the right question to ask. And now it went viral because I'm thinking there's nothing special in what I did. I asked the right question. When would he step down? So, but it came like I had mixed reaction when it came out.
I bet. Were you attacked personally?
Not physically, but oh my goodness, I was definitely attacked, verbally, via email, comments, Facebook, Twitter, all different angles. And I'm like, why is it a big deal that I asked when he would step down? He's in his 90s. Should we not ask when he would step down? If he was my grandfather, I would have asked him a long time ago, when will you step down? Or I would have told him to step down, actually. So I didn't think what I did was a big deal, but obviously it was.
Well, in that context, is political satire a safe occupation in Nigeria?
Say that one more time.
Is political satire a safe occupation in Nigeria?
Is it safe? So I would say there's...
Because in Zimbabwe, it wasn't. A lot of journalists went missing.
Yeah.
Journalists who questioned Mugabe.
Yeah. So I would say that in Nigeria, a while back, maybe like 15 years ago, it's not that safe. But I feel like now with the social media age, more people are doing what I'm doing, which makes me so, so happy. And I feel like the more people do this, the more we would hold our leaders accountable. because it's definitely needed. Mm. So I think it's safer in Nigeria now. I mean, they may arrest you just to make a statement, but they can't really do much to you. So, like, I go to Nigeria and come back. Although I don't announce when I go to Nigeria, I usually go and come back before I announce that I went to Nigeria. So,
is satire and comedy via the internet being used in a way so young Africans can flip the narratives that they're being told via mainstream media in their countries? Is this some sort of fight that's happening online?
Yes, I think it's mostly online. It will be kind of hard. It will be really hard for a show like mine to air on Nigerian National Broadcasting Corporation, if you know what I mean, because it's owned by the government. And here I am yabbing the government official. So they probably would not want to play that on local TV. But online, you don't get censored by anyone, which is the beauty of it. I get to do what I do online. There's something that a lot of people don't know about me. When I was still in grad school, I wanted to start my own media company in Nigeria. And so I went home, I made an inquiry about getting a license, and they basically, first of all, they looked at me up and down and they laughed like, "You this small girl, what are you talking about? It's not going to happen." And then they told me all the money I would have to pay, and they told me it would have to go through the presidency and that alone would take at least 2 years. They basically told me it's not possible. Right. But now I have a show that anyone can watch from anywhere, not just in Nigeria, but in different parts of Africa, so long as you have the internet or you get sent via WhatsApp, because I heard a lot of people watch my show through WhatsApp. So it's wonderful to see that I'm able to do what I'm doing without their license.
And it's wonderful that you're here in Australia. And
yes.
It's been great to meet you and learn about your life and your experience.
Thank you
so much, Adeola Fayan.
Thank you so much for having me.
That's Nigerian journalist and satirist, Adeola Fayan.